Our second case is United States against Allende, counsel for the defense.
May it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Kathleen Cadlick, and I represent the appellant Gilbert Allende in this case. Before this court today stands an appellant with almost 9-year-old record that is riddled with error and authenticated by a biased party in violation of Article 54 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The lower court did not properly evaluate the prejudice after it found that the trial counsel committed this violation. The precedent in this court seems to indicate that an inaccuracy alone triggers prejudice. There were inaccuracies alleged and present in this case. There is a substantial omission alone which should suffice for the alleged inaccuracy. The import of authentication cannot be missed to this case today. The perception, the fact that the verity of the record cannot be questioned once the record is authenticated, and the fact that this court has stated that authentication is the single most important element in the court martial should not be lost on this court.
Could you please draw your attention to page 13 of the CCA's opinion, and where they address prejudice, and they do a tick-tock of their arguments why there's no prejudice in the bottom paragraph. I don't know which version you have. I have the kind that looks like that.
Okay. Yes.
And so they go first, second, third, fourth. Can you review each of those arguments and indicate what your response is?
Well, Your Honor, the lower court crafted this test without any, there's no basis in this court's precedence for this. The lower court focused on the claim that there was no claim pre-authentication by the IMC, and that there was an opportunity to submit Article 38 matters, and the IMC did not take advantage of that. There is no requirement in this court's precedent for that to happen, to find prejudice.
Are we in the same place? Are you arguing that before you get to prejudice, you're pointing out that in your view the CCA should not even be testing for prejudice?
This court's case law seems to indicate that once there is an inaccuracy, that triggers prejudice in this case, according to...
Per se prejudice,
given the import of authentication, Your Honor.
Okay, now, if this court were not to rule in that manner, and we were to address the question of prejudice, could you run through each of the CCA's prejudice arguments, understanding that you don't get there?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll do that proceeding.
But in the off chance, just in case you're wrong.
Plan B, yes. I'll do that, pursuant to the opinion as it's articulated, so as to be most clear on this.
And just say first, we have previously determined that the record is substantially verbatim. That's their first prejudice argument. And what's your response?
There is no indication that that's actually required for prejudice in this case, Your Honor. The fact that there was a substantial omission in and of itself is inaccurate in the record.
Do you disagree that the record was substantially verbatim?
Definitely, Your Honor. Appellant, if the court would like to talk about that and reopen that issue, appellant would be obliged to do so.
So your response to that is it's not substantially verbatim.
It is not substantially verbatim, and nor does it have to be substantially verbatim to be inaccurate. Those are two different things, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is appellant's position.
Second.
As I previously spoke of this, the second and third prongs deal with the inaction, basically, of the IMC, that it was provided an opportunity to comment on any corrections he felt necessary to make the record accurate, and third, that he did not raise any legal issue concerning the record's accuracy prior to the CA taking action. Again, there is no basis in law for this. It is the government's burden to make sure that this record is inaccurate.
But as a factual matter, do you disagree with those two conclusions by the CCA?
They did, in fact, have the opportunity to comment.
They did, Your Honor.
They did, in fact,
from what we have in the record, there is evidence that the record was served on the IMC, and there's no mention in the clemency before the convening authority took action that the record wasn't accurate. Again, there is no burden on the appellant to make this record accurate, and that is not a proper consideration of prejudice.
Understanding, but you're, fair enough. That's all part of your rebuttal, but you're also not, as a factual matter at least, you're not disagreeing that they had a chance, the IMC had a chance to make corrections and did not raise any legal issue concerning the record's accuracy prior to the CAA.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And the fourth thing is there are no allegations that what is in the record is inaccurate. What is your response to that?
By alleging substantial omissions, that in and of itself is alleging an inaccuracy. And so that's...
It's inaccurate for what it omits, not for what it includes, in your view.
Yes, Your Honor, and there's no precedent that that's not a proper consideration. The fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, this trial counsel authenticated this record that was inaccurate in violation of Article 54.
Counsel, if there are substantial omissions, then what's the consequence with respect to the case?
Those substantial omissions in this case, Your Honor, have not properly been rebutted by the government, and that makes this record is not substantially verbatim. Therefore, this court must provide relief.
Right. But the court didn't grant review on that basis. So don't we proceed in this case on the view that there are no substantial omissions in the case that are prejudicial to the accused? I'm not asking you to concede that, but for purposes of the granted issue now before us, is that not our posture?
For purposes of the granted issue, Your Honor, that is not before us, and all you have is a substantial omission that the lower court found to be properly rebutted by the record, and hence that the record is substantially verbatim.
Okay. So in that context, then, what is the basis in our precedent for saying in that circumstance there is no test for prejudice? I understand from your brief the cases that you've cited in which the court has not particularly emphasized prejudice, but do we have a case that says, as a matter of law, that omissions from the record when you have a improper authentication are per se prejudicial?
We do not have that before this court, Your Honor.
Then why should we hold that? And I'll ask that in the context of the practice that takes place in other courts, and let's look particularly at United States District Courts. In the military justice system, there's a requirement for authentication by the military judge. Is that necessary as a matter of due process or fairness, looking at the way that cases are tried in United States District Courts?
It is not, Your Honor.
And why should we find prejudice per se?
Because of the nature of the military justice system and the import of authentication that has been determined in military courts, Your Honor.
What is there about the nature of the military justice system that differentiates it from the practice of criminal law in the United States District Courts that makes it essential to have authentication by the judge in a circumstance where, not asking you to concede this, but in terms of the grand issue now before us, there are not substantial omissions?
There is mandatory review in the military justice system, Your Honor, and the court reporters in federal court are responsible for providing the accurate record, and it's my understanding that there's actually two different mechanisms to back that up. But insofar as the military justice system, there's a mandatory appellate review. In 1949, Congress revamped the entire military justice system because of the pervasive perception of the unfairness of the system, and hence the Article 54 requirement was born.
But if, for purposes of the granted issue now before us, the case is substantially verbatim, then why should the absence of authentication create any problem in the CCA's conducting their Article 66 review?
It's not just the Article 66 review of the case, Your Honor. There's a statutory mandate, and this is similar, you can draw an analogy to the substantially verbatim precedent in this court, that the Article 66 review and their ability to perform that is one thing, but it's also another thing to violate that statutory mandate. This court in Gray, when the government did successfully rebut the lack of trial counsel's objections by providing an affidavit by the trial counsel, stated in Gray that, as this court pointed out in Sturdivant, what is of concern is not the sufficiency of the record for purposes of review, but with the statutory command regarding the type of record that must be made of court-martial proceedings.
And what kind of, what is the statutory command? That it be substantially verbatim?
Yeah,
well, and that's conceded here. Well, not conceded, but it's not before us.
I'm trying, to draw an analogy, okay, Your Honor, to the import of Article 54.
Okay.
On to relief in this case. Had this been raised and brought to, and actually...
But where does the substantially verbatim requirement come from? Does that come from statute or does that come from case law?
That comes from case law, Your Honor.
Right. So if I'm not suggesting that one bad deed deserves another, but if in this context due process can be satisfied and the statute can be satisfied by substantial compliance with the nature, with the verbatim nature of the record, why isn't that sufficient if there's authentication which may be deficient but to which no prejudice attaches?
So you're suggesting a substantially accurate type of an
analogy? No. In other words, in terms of if substantial compliance is sufficient to meet the statutory requirement for a complete verbatim record, even though it's not complete, and that then permits the Article 66 review to take place and further review to take place at our court, why, if that is sufficient, a record that is not properly authenticated is inherently prejudicial?
Because, Your Honor, inaccuracy is different than substantially verbatim. The perception that authentication protects against is not addressed in the substantially verbatim context, and that is the element that's missing. If you allow this record to bypass this process, then it doesn't, then authentication is virtually meaningless in this instance. Perception is that important. Additionally, I'll have to come back to that. I had a second point, and it just escaped.
That's fine. Take your time.
If I may move on to prejudice at this point, if the court has, relief at this point, if the court has no further questions as to the nature of the prejudice, what should have happened was a new authentication. This is really a minor relief. There's no windfall to the appellant. To make sure that this record is accurate, it should have been submitted for a new authentication. An appellant submits that that's what should have happened in this case, but this court needs to deal with the issue that this is 9 years, almost 9 years from the date of trial, that the single most important element is now missing in this process. Of authentication of a record riddled with errors by a biased party. This court must give redress in this instance, no less than what could be given with a violation of a substantial omission, that being the RCM 1103 sentence. That is the very, very least that should be done by this court. This court could take a more proactive stance and set aside the findings in this case as well. That is up to the court. Given the perception of to the military justice system and the statutory violation, appellant is entitled to no less than an RCM 1103 sentence, no BCD, no confinement in excess of 6 months, and no forfeitures in excess of 6 months. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Captain Jeff Scherz, co-counsel is Colonel Luis Puglio, and we represent the government. There is only one issue before this court this morning, Your Honor, and that is whether the lower court erred when it concluded that trial counsel's erroneous authentication was harmless. The lower court correctly concluded, and we agree, that trial counsel erroneously authenticated the record at trial. And in light of this erroneous authentication, the lower court applied that the proper legal framework to determine prejudice, that being applying Article 69A harmless error analysis as opposed to automatically remaining the record of trial due to the erroneous authentication. As an initial matter, Your Honor, this court has never adopted a rule requiring automatic remand in the case of erroneous authentication cases. Rather, this court has acknowledged that in such cases, a test for prejudice would be appropriate in these situations. In 2000, this court in United States versus Ayers, which is another erroneous authentication case, considered the propriety of authorization of the record of trial by an assistant trial counsel. Now, it is important to note here in Ayers, unlike this case, appellant did not challenge the verbatim nature of the record of trial. But again, as was already discussed by this court, Your Honor, the record was decided to be substantially verbatim by the lower court and is not at issue before this court this morning. Now, in Ayers, this court did conclude that an assistant trial counsel was authorized to authenticate the record of trial. Therefore, no erroneous authentication was found. However, the key takeaway from this court's decision in Ayers was in Dipke, where the court stated, even assuming arguendo that Captain Lynch, the assistant trial counsel, was not detailed as a trial to be the trial counsel, and he was not acting under trial counsel's supervision, this technical regulatory violation was harmless. Here, this court clearly acknowledged, albeit hypothetically, the propriety of a harmless error analysis with respect to erroneous authentication cases, Your Honor.
Counsel, the harmless error, assuming that the harmless error applies to the ultimate question of whether the findings or sentence may not be held to be incorrect, why is the system served by a process in which, when everyone knows at the outset of the arrival of this record at the Court of Criminal Appeals, that there's been a fatal error with respect to authentication, not fatal, but a clear error with respect to authentication. Why does it make sense to litigate the issue of harmlessness with all the time that that takes of counsel, both parties, and the three judges at the Court of Criminal Appeals? Why don't we simply have a requirement to have that case returned to the military judge for authentication and proper action?
Your Honor, from a policy standpoint, an automatic remand will create a slippery slope, thereby requiring the automatic remand of every case involving erroneous authentication. And there's no reasonable policy argument for remanding these cases back when a simple harmless error analysis can be applied to whatever the erroneous authentication is, as it is here in this case, trial counsel erroneously authenticated the case in the absence of the military judge without appending the appropriate reason why the military judge was absent.
So the government's view is that the system is better served by litigating harmlessness at the Court of Criminal Appeals rather than correcting the error with respect to the underlying integrity of the authentication.
I would, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Now, the next question, Your Honor, we must decide if the lower court correctly came to the right legal conclusion, and that being harmlessness as a matter of law. After testing for prejudice, the lower court correctly found that trial counsel's improper authentication did not materially prejudice the material rights or the substantial rights of the appellant. And the court articulated four bases for this legal conclusion, which again were discussed by this court earlier this morning. The first being that the court found the record of trial to be substantially verbatim. This factor, along with the other three bases articulated, demonstrates how the court legally concluded through harmless error analysis that there was no prejudice to the substantial rights of appellant as a result of the erroneous authentication. Again, Your Honor, the purpose of the authentication is to ensure the verity of the record. The lower court held that despite trial counsel's erroneous authentication, there was no reason to question the verity of the record in this case. Again, they concluded that with respect to the substantial omission, it was the presumption of prejudice was rebutted by the record of trial in that case. IMC and civilian post-trial civilian defense counsel were afforded the opportunity to suggest changes. They did not. Therefore, there is no reason to believe any appearance of impropriety will attend the court's decision with respect to prejudice. Lower court's consideration of assigned error was thorough, it was proper, and it was precise, and they correctly evaluated prejudice in this case. Therefore, for the foregoing reasons, clearly, a harmless error analysis is appropriate in this situation. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I just wanted to make sure that I understand what it is you're arguing in terms of your response to the Chief Judge's question. It's one thing to say that under the case law of this court and under the applicable rules, harmless error analysis is what the law requires. It's quite another thing for you to argue, as it sounded like you were, that as a matter of common sense and expediency, that that's the best way to proceed. You're not suggesting that it makes the most sense for this issue to percolate up through the system as opposed to being dealt with at the lowest possible level, are you?
No, Your Honor. Obviously, the best situation would be before this case reaches the Criminal Court of Appeals, the appropriate Court of Appeals, that the error will be caught and it would be sent back to have the authentication process corrected. However, once it reaches the criminal court and it is being argued, at that point, rather than do the paper trail and send it back and go through the steps in a process, the best situation there, and as far as judicial economy goes in that situation, once it's already at the court, go and decide the issue based on harmless error, Your Honor.
Is the Court of Criminal Appeals precluded from looking at the case and saying this case has difficult issues in it with respect to the substantiality of the compliance with the verbatim record requirement and with harmlessness, and that in the interest of judicial economy, we're remanding it to the convening authority to ensure proper authentication? Would that be error for the Court of Criminal Appeals to do that?
No, Your Honor. The Court of Criminal Appeals was certainly well within the province to make that determination. However, that was not the situation in this particular case. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Appellant did challenge the verbatim record, the verbatim nature of this record on appeal, opposed to the government's contention that the appellant did not. That matter is not before this court today. The burden is on the government to produce this accurate record, and this should be dealt with as soon as possible if it is not done. That is why there is a non-biased party that is in charge of authenticating this record, making it, providing absolute verity to this record. This eliminates any appearance of impropriety and ensures neutrality in having this process done. This is an important component of mandatory appellate review in the United States military. What happened in this case was a trial counsel, not like the trial counsel in Ayers, who submitted 4 pages of corrections to this record, but a trial counsel that improperly authenticated this record that was full of errors. This court must give relief and send a message to trial counsels and military judges about the import of authentication. That relief should be no less than an RCM 1103 sentence today, and this court does have the purview to award more relief than that. If that concludes, if there are no more questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Again, we thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. This concludes our arguments for this week, and the court will be adjourned.
All rise. Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.